If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Blog Talk Radio.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hello everyone, happy full moon Friday.
Hello, hello, hello.
We're very excited to be back on this lovely, well, it's still sunny here, but I imagine in some parts of the United States it's dark and the moon is shining brightly.
And if not, we can imagine it.
Yes.
If we pull it in.
Yes.
So, what was your week like?
Well, so I have a Pisces rising. My ascendant sign is Pisces. And I'm noticing that as I'm getting older every year, I'm really feeling the effects of that Pisces sign more and more on my life. And I, as a Taurus who's not been super emotional ever, I don't really like it. So I'm noticing, you know, the full moon is in Pisces today, and it's also an eclipse, and I'm really feeling heightened emotional. I'm feeling heightened sensitivity, and it's very interesting and a little uncomfortable for me. So that's how I'm doing. How are you?
Wow. Well, let's see. That hasn't been my experience, but then see, my moon is in Gemini. So we get there, that's fine. And I actually am feeling pretty good considering all the things that have been coming and going in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Mercury retrograde plays its tricks. I did have a piece of very important mail from, yes, the IRS that I got, and I seem to have, when I was at my mechanics, somehow threw it away with some other pieces of mail that I didn't need.
No.
So I had to go retrieve it. And I was freaking out last night until I figured out that that was the only place it could be. And I got a chance to leave a message, and they called me and said they found it.
Oh, wow.
So
Mercury.
Yes, indeed. And even though I was born on a Mercury retrograde, and
Ew. We
were talking about that, this particular event was just one of those, you know, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
So that being the case, that was my week in a nutshell.
Nice. Yep. The other thing I got up to this week was meeting with Christina, who is the owner of Muir's Tea House, M-U-I-R, like John Muir, in Sevastopol, because her and I are collaborating for a fun little Halloween-y event in October, on October 22nd. We're going to do a tea and tarot event. And actually, Elvira and I and Pollyanna Costa, who's a talented reader and astrologer, will all be doing readings at this tarot and tea event. And it's going to be spooky and Victorian and fun. And I'm just, her and I giggled and made plans and got dramatic and drew up flyers. And it was so goober, cheesy, fun. It's so fun. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a hoot.
And as I remember reading, there's also a seance afterwards.
Yes.
Ooh.
Seance and some spooky Victorian storytelling. And it's just, the whole thing is so, it's going to be fun.
Well, we're coming to that time of the year where, I mean, we definitely get to enjoy our fullest exciting moments of, should I say, witchy stuff?
Yeah, we can let our witch flags fly.
No kidding.
Even if we don't want people to know, if we're not out of the broom closet, we can still be witchy and no one will know the difference because we can just blame it on Halloween.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, and thusly, what we will be talking about in this very moment from now on for this broadcast will be ritual.
Ritual.
Yay. And we want to describe that.
Yeah. I love ritual. And I, you know, as Elvira and I do our own little planning, and then we come together and we talk about what we want to talk about, and then we kind of get into the details of it. So it's this interesting back and forth. And the first thing for me around ritual is literally anything can be a ritual. The way you wake up in the morning, the way you brush your teeth, the way you take a shower, the way you drive your car, anything can be a ritual. And so, you know, I think what's important in this conversation is delineating not just your routines, which can become ritual, but the actual creating of something sacred and cutting something out that is sacred, which absolutely can be brushing your teeth. That can be a sacred act. But what is it you do to prepare for that? Why? What's the point? How do you do it in a ritualistic type of way?
I think my dentist would approve that you wanted to talk about brushing one's teeth as a ritual, of course. But, yes, I agree. And when we go in and we start looking at what we consider ritual, how we started to do ritual, what it was that made it important in our lives in terms of the spiritual practice, then going and finding the different things that we do, because we do our research too. We try to bring other things than just our personal experience. And I found it fascinating that, I hope I don't butcher the poor man's name, but Tom Chetwood, Dictionary of Symbols, says that ritual is the dramatic enactment of myth designed to make a sufficiently deep impression on the individual to reach his or her unconscious.
Mm.
That can take on many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we will probably be talking about different definitions and different aspects of ritual magic.
Right. And I sort of, you know, I have two lineages that I am most often drawing upon when I practice magic or specifically the pagans part of me, not necessarily spell crafting, but more of my devotional religious side. You know, I have this Gardnerian thread and I have this reclaiming thread. And Gardnerian rituals are written down beforehand. They're memorized. You do the same symbols and gestures and process every time. You're creating these pathways. And, you know, I think of it like the neural pathways. Every time it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, so the experience can get deeper and deeper and deeper. Where on the other side, my reclaiming tradition side is ecstatic and organic, and we never write a script. But you jump in there and you allow spirit to move you and you do what comes to you. And so I have this very interesting, personally, this routine, rote, focused, almost serious ritual side. And then I have this playful, ecstatic, make it up as we go along side. And I feel like Well, that's me, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I think that that can also be a description of how I view ritual. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is the traditional aspects that I learned and how you draw a circle, how you make sacred space, how you hold yourself in sacred space, what are the symbols and the traditions. And one of the things that I did find was what they were talking about is the particular magics that draw on specific types of what ritual is to them. So you have ceremonial magic that employs, you know, colors and robes and tools and incense and wands and all kinds of stuff. And I think that then you go to, say, the hermetic, mm-hmm. which is more of the, they dispense with all that stuff, and they basically are dealing with your psychic and your spiritual and mental development, and it's you. And then you go to the Kabbalistic, which uses the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. And then you have witches that follow different aspects. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get the Gardnerian versus the,
right.
you get the reclaiming. Right. And I personally think I have learned both, and I'm a blend.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's not unusual for modern witches, modern pagans, is to have this sort of blend, this eclectic mishmash, for lack of a better word, of all of these little threads that kind of create the practice that we do. And, you know, there's the practice I do when I'm with this circle and the practice that I do when I'm with this circle, but then there's what I do when I'm alone. And that's a blend of everything. That's got some hoodoo wrapped in there. It's got some things I've learned at PantheaCon. It's got this trick I learned from this person and that person. You know, my personal rituals
mm-hmm.
are impacted by all of those things.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that, again, becomes what we see in our own growth. We start one place, whatever that place may be,
mm-hmm.
and then become organic to what we find works for us.
Right.
And if we are in a group that is reclaiming, we will follow and honor traditions, just like when you're in the house of worship of, you know, going to Catholic Mass,
mm-hmm.
or if you go into a Lutheran church, or if you go to Episcopalian, or you are in the temple.
Right.
You have different things that you work with there and you honor.
Right.
And follow.
That's what makes it fun.
I know. And I think that's why I like what it is I do
mm-hmm.
as a witch, is that I can follow that which is there. And I don't feel I'm out of the loop in any one of them. I'm just part of it all, and I'll enjoy one or the other. I know for a while there, I wound up going to, we have a Catholic church here, and so I wound up going to Mass there. And then I wound up going to the Orthodox, I think it was the Russian Orthodox.
Oh, yeah.
And
they were dedicating
their new church.
Right.
And so I went there. Of course, I was kind of stunned. You know, you stand up all the time, and, you know, they have all these different icons that are beautiful, and,
right.
you know, there's all this stuff. And then I come out of there going, okay, I enjoyed it, but that, you know, I go back to my own and I go, oh, it's so nice. I feel so, you know, I've included them and I've been there, but I've got my own.
Right, right. Our own rituals.
Our own rituals.
Yeah.
Our own rituals.
Yeah. And we started this list, Elvira and I started this list of what do you do rituals for? And so this, you know, I'm sure this list could be expanded upon, but to start off, we have what you might do a ritual for today, the Ispat, the full moon. In modern paganism and modern witchcraft, witches gather on the full moon, and they do ritual. And for the full moon, that ritual can look like anything. It can be some healing work. You can do some spell work. You can do some oracular work, but you create a ritual during the height of the full moon in order to worship, honor, soak up, whatever, the energy of that full moon. So that's something you might want to do tonight.
Ooh. I think I will. Of course, I'm going to wait till it's dark. It's a little too sunny right now.
Yeah. Dark is fun.
Yeah.
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 Then you have rituals for Sabbats, which are the witches or pagans' wheel of the year, our holidays. like Halloween, which we were just talking about, or like next week with the fall equinox, you would go to a Sabbat ritual or have a Sabbat ritual for that, to honor the changing of the seasons. You do rituals in modern witchcraft to honor that rotation, the wheel of the year cycling around, right? You could also do rituals for spells. If you have a spell that you are wanting to work on, if you have something you need to bring into your life, something you need to banish from your life, a ritual, doing a spell is a ritual. And I don't think everyone holds it that way, but I absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely do. And we started to talk a little bit about correspondences, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And connection. And that, for me, I feel like that fits most in spell work, using correspondences around ritual.
Right, colors, direction, specific things that you're calling to a specific direction, a specific deity or elemental, and the colors and the things, the gemstones that you use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and also we actually talked about, and I was saying, well, what about hand fasting and naming ceremonies and transition ceremonies? She says, well, rites of passage. That's what we do rituals for too.
Right, right. That's, and I think that's a... religiously, that's pretty universal. All religions have rites of passage rituals, and that might not be the phrase that they use, but a wedding is a rites of passage ritual. No matter what tradition you're coming from, it's a ritual. You're connecting yourself in a ritual space to another person. So rites of passage rituals, and also devotional rituals. Most of the folks I know who practice paganism or witchcraft are polytheists. They worship more than one god, and so you can have a devotional ritual to honor the gods that you work with. And this, you know, maybe it's Mercury because we're in Mercury retrograde and we need him to be gentle with us, or maybe we are really feeling connected to Aphrodite and we just adore her and love her and everything about her makes us excited, and so we do a ritual to say, hey, Aphrodite, I love you and I'm devoting myself to you. And then listen as she speaks and hear what other plans she might have for you, because the gods always have plans.
And they always talk to you. You just have to be willing to have the radio on to the frequency.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So there's lots of different ways to work within these types of rituals. But really what you're doing is you're making this event sacred.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's creating, cutting out, and making a space for something sacred that you want to have as the dominion of what you're doing, mm-hmm. meaning I am doing a hand fasting, or I am doing consecration of tools, or I am doing an herbal spell for more juju good stuff to come in,
mm-hmm.
that kind of a thing.
Right.
And you were mentioning about creating the sacred space and ritual, because whenever I do spell work or root work,
mm-hmm.
I always, always, always create sacred space in doing that. It's just part of how I see the process. It's necessary. I need to have it. Obviously, I might want to have a room one day that I have only for that.
Right.
But, you know.
Would you say more about that? Because I don't know. When I do root work, I don't know that I'm consciously creating sacred space, so I would love to hear a little bit more about how you hold that, what your process is like.
Well, actually, one of the things I do is I set up my table at my ancestor altar, and actually it happens to still, it's right in front of, well, she's looking out across the table. She can actually see where I do it.
Yeah.
But I do it there, and what I will do is I will literally take the salt. I will pull the salt. I'll do the actual making of the circle around that table that I am using as my altar and where I am at. Call in my deity. I will call the directions in. I will make sure that any negative energy is kept out or swept out. All the things we will talk about in the second half, but I do that. And then as I have set up the spell work to be done, candle work, spell work, mojo bag, whatever it may be, in that tradition of hoodoo, I do it within that sacred space.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's definitely been rituals that I've done for clients that have been a little bit more hoodoo borrowed from, perhaps, or within the realm of hoodoo, but I wouldn't call it hoodoo, you know, and I am very clear with my clients, like if someone wants strict hoodoo, that's what I'm looking for, then I make sure I follow, you know, those instructions and the energy that they need. But I don't know that I don't think I've ever created sacred space in that way when I'm working on a spell or creating a mojo or whatever. That's so interesting. Maybe I'll give it a shot and see how
well,
it feels.
I found that that was how I could focus. And obviously, I have, as you can tell when she comes here, I have different altars set up, and my whole entire house is a temple with different altars,
yeah,
and including my bathrooms, please understand that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And that's why I choose to create sacred space within that sacred,
mm-hmm,
space for the work I do, because it is for other people. It is not for me.
Sure. Well, you know what? Now that I'm starting to really like sink into this idea and think about it, I do all my root work in one specific place.
See?
I have a dedicated space where I do spell work, and it only happens in that space. I try to not spread that stuff all over my house, or, and you know, and I have a little shed out in my backyard where I burn candles for people and do some ritual stuff,
mm-hmm,
out there. It's literally a shed. Like, you can't fit more than one person in there. It's just,
I attest to that. I've seen that.
but I guess that is my sacred space, because that's all that happens there. So,
mm-hmm,
work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
See? We get a little information for each other. And I know that when I had a larger place to live, I actually had a room dedicated for ritual,
mm-hmm,
for meditation, for spell work, for any of that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I downsized, and to the degree that it is more logical for me to make an area in my home, and the one that seems to have fit for what I'm doing,
mm-hmm,
just happens to be with my ancestor altar. And that just happened. It became organic. It's like, where do I do this? Where do I do this?
Yeah.
And it answered my question pretty succinctly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I've,
yeah,
been working on, I'm going to be on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour on Sunday.
Ooh.
And we're going to talk about family magic. And so I've been working on the spell, the free spell about family stuff, and it features ancestor altars and doing ritual around that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Ritual.
Yeah.
You can never have too much.
No, you can't. And
no.
I think that in terms of the different aspects of ritual, it's kind of interesting, because I went through and found some interesting quotes that different people have said, or what tends to be, psychologically it's this, spiritually it's that. And I understand we can talk about all of that, but I don't want to beleaguer the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do use the tool that is us,
yeah,
to create sacred space,
right,
and to do ritual,
right, right. And I think what I want to be clear here about, and Miss Kat brings up something in the chat room about sacred space and an altar, as though they're different things, and they're not, right? So if I have, she's, you know, sort of asking for clarification on what I just said. That altar sacred, I went through a process to create that space and have it always set up for that, right? That the ritual I did was to turn this space into something sacred. But when we're talking about a sabbat, or a devotional ritual, or a rites of passage ritual, you go through a process in that ritual to delineate, now we are in this sacred space, right?
Right.
And there's lots of witches and pagans who say, we're always in sacred space. The earth is sacred space. We're always in sacred space. But after the break, we're going to break down the mechanics of a ritual and talk about the steps that you can do to create a ritual. And there is a process of creating a circle consciously, directing energy, like we've talked about in previous shows, using your wand or your athame to cut the space and to say what happens in here is sacred, and whatever is going on out there will not interfere or shift the energy of what we're doing in here. We're going to focus and make intention around what's in this circle. So I think once you create an altar or you dedicate something as sacred space, it's always that. But within ritual, you delineate, this is the ritual, this is the sacred working we're doing, and when it's over, we're going to release that. We're going to let it go and release that. Mm-hmm. And you can do that with an altar, too. If you're done with this being an altar space, then you release the energy and you cleanse it and you clear it and you make it just a plain old desk again instead of your ritual desk.
Right, right. Kind of reminds me of what goes on in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas.
And right.
Only I'm using it in the ritualistic terms. It stays within the format of that circle as that dimension because it is separate from the macrocosm microcosm process.
Right.
So when we say we're between the worlds, it truly means we are between the worlds.
Right. Right. We are shifting the energy to do the ritual working. And I think actually in the chat room, pretty early on in the conversation, someone mentioned intention, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who that was. But we're creating this sacred space. We're carving out this circle. We're going in between the worlds with an intention. And perhaps that intention is because it's the equinox and we're going to honor the turning of the wheel. Or perhaps that intention is I'm going to do this love spell. Or perhaps the intention is I'm going to do a devotional ritual for Aphrodite. Whatever the intention is, that's what you're making the container for, to hold that intention so you can do that working. And all traditions of witchcraft or neo-paganism or modern witchcraft, however you want to look at it, do that process different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we break down the steps of ritual, Elvira and I are going to have different opinions on the order and the structure and the way that it's done. And if you start to look at different traditions and study with different teachers, everyone has their own flavor and their own way. Your mileage may vary on that one.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And I find myself looking at making sacred space even when you talk about meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into a certain place in a certain way. But when we choose to do it as witches, to go into sacred space, to honor whatever it is we're going to do, it is with direct intent. Mm-hmm. It is with focus. And whatever we are doing, we set it up and we start to proceed accordingly. Just like you set a dining room table for a small intimate dinner or a large banquet.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So as far as anything else that we can discuss about using ritual in a format. I know we were talking about doing our teeth and things like that in ritual in a way that's mindful. I think that's another word that we come up with is a mindful way.
Mm-hmm. I feel maybe touching in on intention would be good. You know, before entering into a ritual, before creating the container, before all of that, it's important to know why. Why are you going to do this? What is the purpose of doing this? And I locally work with a reclaiming group. It's a ritual planning group, and we plan rituals for the public for the 8 Sabbaths of the year. And we do this with consensus process, so it's not democratic. It's not 3-2. Okay, we're going to invoke Caradwyn. You know, we all have to agree. And there are 10 of us right now on this group. So it takes some work to plan the rituals. It takes work to agree on the intention and crafting the words around the intention. It's probably the longest part of our planning process. and you don't necessarily have to have an intention. There are lots of groups that just jump in there and go wild. But I feel like knowing what you're doing, what is the point, what is the purpose,
mm-hmm.
helps the shape of the ritual come together much more smoothly.
Well, and you're talking about, in its own right, raising the cone of power.
Right.
And when you raise a cone of power, like anything that you focus, if you have a better idea of what you're doing, you will have a better connection with the power that you raise and to create it.
Right.
Thus, an intent is important, in my personal opinion, rather than just running in and going, oh, I think I'm going to make this ritual and we're all going to feel good and we're going to, you know, get in and we just need to do our crying in a sacred space, which it's not to say that people that I know and, you know, I've circled with don't happen to fall into that when we start to do the ritual and mm-hmm. it touches us
mm-hmm.
or it's a theme that everyone sort of starts having an emotional release is a
right.
good way of
right.
putting it.
Right.
So,
well, I think a lot of folks out in the world don't get a lot of times to experience their inner landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the average person out there in the world is pretty cut off from that part of themselves. We don't give a lot of time and credence to exploring your subconscious, your unconscious, your inner landscape, your emotional self. You know, it's stiff upper lip and you fight and you work through it and you just, you know, you do the thing.
Yeah.
And so in ritual space, when you create this container, you create an intention that allows people to explore those pieces of themselves. It can be very moving. It can be very moving. Even if nothing is emotionally triggering for you, which is, you know, one of those buzzwords right now, getting triggered by something.
All right.
Just experiencing the process of intentional ritual can be really impactful.
Yes, and it can be incredibly intimate. And I think that's the other part is when you get into ritual, when you, as a group, when there's more than one person, you are becoming open to each other's inner landscape.
Right.
Because
right.
you're opening that power of who you are
yeah.
to be part of the power that is the circle.
And I think that's especially true when we're talking about coven work.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, it's an intimate group,
mm-hmm.
a small group of people who come together on a regular basis and share really personal, challenging, private struggles, you know, joys and sorrows with each other.
Right.
It creates a really intense bond. And going into a sacred space, into a ritual with those folks who know the things about you
yeah.
that your coworker may not know or your sibling may not know or your spouse may not know,
mm-hmm.
you know?
It's, mm-hmm. it's very, and that makes it empowering because in the end, that process that opens us up may make us stand naked, mm-hmm. but, mm-hmm. and we're not talking ritual nakedness, we're talking
sky clad. Yes.
We're talking about our own being, our emotions, our, you know, who we are. That is empowering because the other people see you.
Yeah.
And it's like no one has a negative. It's everyone is looking at each other in the same eyes of that intended purpose of the circle and the ritual.
It's the concept of perfect love and perfect trust.
Ah, there we are.
Right, which is hard. And
yes.
I'm actually about to post a blog about this concept. Perfect love and perfect trust, you're often challenged in certain, especially Wicca, you're challenged before you can enter the circle. Do you enter this circle with perfect love and perfect trust? If you aren't feeling it, don't enter the circle. You have to be able to trust the people who are in that ritual with you. You have to be able to be naked in all of the senses of that word and still feel safe and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I love ritual.
Totally understand it. It's interesting. When I had to change locations, I had to go over all my ritual tools and items mm-hmm. and decide what ones I had to either put away, give away, do something with. And where I was going to make my new home, what it was going to hold. It was both interesting, scary, and then the ritual of just doing what I needed to do to make this place sacred. And one of the things I tell a lot of my clients, of course, is to do the things we do as a sacred ritual.
Mm-hmm.
May not be that when you start, but you suddenly find it happening.
Right, right.
You know, that child in you takes over and you are definitely
right
there.
Yeah, and ideally you want the ritual process to speak to your child self so that you can be engaged with it, you know. And there's lots of ways folks enter ritual, like we mentioned sky cloud or naked, or some groups have robes, specific colors or cuts or styles depending on the group. Other circles, you can wear whatever the heck you want. Some rituals I've been to have been clothing optional. So there have been people completely nude, and there have been people partially dressed, and then people completely covered from head to toe. And so you'll find groups that are that do ritual in that full rainbow of experience. So if nudity is something that you're not super excited about doing with 12 other people, then you might want to find a group that doesn't practice skyclad, that, that uses robes or other specific ritual clothing.
Because ritual, basically, when you do ritual, it's created with many different tools, and you use literature, poetry, drama, woodworking, needlepoint. You engage music, you engage everything. So it's a creative process. It is also one that requires you to have patience and a good humor and imagination and insight. So I think that it has these aspects. It draws on so much when you do ritual. And sometimes just when I start creating the altar for our work here, when we do a show, I always have an altar. I didn't really plan on doing this. It just sort of became an organic process to come out. And it's important. It seems to have meaning. It puts an anchor to what we're doing.
Yeah, it's the ritual before the show.
Exactly. I mean, we don't sit and do a bunch of stuff in that format, but we do talk, so I guess that is sort of a ritual.
Absolutely.
Because we get organized, we have an insight, we're moving into a direction. And so ritual can be a wide range and in terms of how you approach it and what you do. And I think that it's up to all of us to choose. So
you're listening
see
to
you
the
after
Witch,
the break.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendala's Corner, starring Kendala Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we're back.
We're back. Well, one of the things I need to quickly mention is, again, our wonderful Mystic Fair that will be happening October 15th and 16th, and it will be at the Veterans Center here, the Santa Rosa Memorial Veterans Center. It'll be from 10 to 5, free admission and free parking with all kinds of wonderful people there and products. Lucky Mojo will be there, Milk and Honey. Both Phoenix and I will be there in different capacities, but we'll be there, and it will be fun, fun, fun. And we also have belly dancers. They will be there at least the second day.
Fun.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
Okay.
Hey.
Here we go with how to do an actual magic circle.
Right. Well, so, and just to be transparent here, Elvira and I have not discussed this part beforehand. So it'll be very interesting to see where we differ and where we agree and how we do things differently, because we come from very different spiritual, magical backgrounds, so I'm kind of stoked about this.
Okay, so let you start off, my dear.
Okay, for me, the first step, now we've already talked about intention, so let's pretend we know what our intention is. We're not going to talk about that again. That's done. We've solved the intention problem.
Okay.
The first step is purification. So whether, for me, so whether that is taking a ritual bath an hour before you even have your ritual, or, for example, when we do public ritual, we always have someone doing asperging, right? So we have a bowl of salt water and often a rosemary sprig, and priestesses stand at the entryway of the hall and sprinkle people with this blessed water as they come in to help remove any yuck that may have gathered on them before the ritual. So for me, a purification / cleansing is the first step.
Well, I'm right there with you. I don't think we're going to have an argument. I usually do it more with air, so it's incense. I tend to use incense and smudging.
Smudge, yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
So that's a little bit of a variation.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like smudging too, personally. Mm-hmm. The only reason we don't do that in public rituals is because so many people have sensitivities.
Right, right.
That sage or smudging can upset folks sometimes.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Okay. So for me, the next step is the grounding and centering process. So before casting the circle, bringing yourself to a place of center, remembering to not deplete your energy that you can pull on the earth and the sky to help keep your energy going, to release any, again, some of that yuck that may have stuck to you on your way to the ritual or from work the day before or whatever, that grounding and centering process.
Okay, that's going to be a little bit of a difference. I seem to have a little bit more of that sort of rush in and do what I'm doing concept. I think that instead of sitting or standing and doing something where that is the case, I basically take one deep breath and jump in.
Mm. Nice.
So it's not quite the same thing.
Right, right. So then next for me is the creating of the container. So casting the circle, like we've talked about with the athame and the wand, shows, you know, using a tool. It could be one of those two, or your finger, or sometimes a sword, or some other beautiful dramatic thing. In the reclaiming tradition, we start casting in the north and then go clockwise, unless you're in Australia where they go counterclockwise. But I know lots of other traditions start in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm used to starting in the north, and that's my default. But I know not everyone does it that way.
Okay. Well, usually what I have done is, if I have not swept the space with a broom counterclockwise or Wittersham,
mm-hmm.
We do it now. Mm-hmm. If it has already been done or someone has been allocated to do that prior to our entering the sacred space, then what I do is I will take my athame and I will basically use it to draw the circle around in circular form, and then use it to basically, as one of my teachers said, scare the boogeyman away. So walking around saying, you know, I'm going to hurt you if you do this, if you come into our circle.
Mm.
So that's how I do that step.
Mm. There was a moment, you know, because my young witchy poo days were very much book learning and just trying things and seeing what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then early in those days, I met someone who had lots more experience than me and hands-on experience with groups and not just on their own. And they told me this thing that revolutionized my practice, and now it just seems so obvious, but, you know, at 15, I didn't get this concept. But we're actually, when we say creating a circle, we're actually creating a sphere, right? So when I was 15, I was creating a boundary, like a fence. But then everything can still get in from above and below. You need a roof and a floor of your circle to create a full container to hold your ritual intention. And there are also differing opinions on that. Are you holding the intention in, or are you keeping the stuff out that may want to interfere with your ritual?
Mm-hmm.
And both can be true.
Mm-hmm.
But I know some traditions very much focus on the keeping of the out, while other traditions focus on the keeping of the in.
Right, right. Well, and I think that step or that consciousness is dual. It's like when I talk sometimes I talk about being in, I love this, the hamster ball.
Yeah.
Because the hamster hangs around with all the stuff inside, but he can run around all over the place and not be bothered by everything else. So you're doing actually, I think, as you say, both.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
So.
And I also have seen folks, especially ceremonial magicians, where the circle is quite small, and it may even be drawn with chalk, or a boundary may be made with salt, and they stay within that boundary, where other traditions create an invisible, unless you really see energy, which sadly I don't, but if you do see energy, you may see the boundary, but they create a much larger boundary energetically that may go around the whole room or the whole building. Especially with public ritual, you would try to make that boundary to include the bathrooms.
Of course. Very important.
You know, do things like that. So, making the container.
Making the container.
Right? Mm-hmm. Then in the reclaiming tradition, the next thing we do is invoke the elements. And I know some traditions, when they create their boundary, also invoke the elements and are drawing, you know, the invoking pentagrams at all of the corners and speaking specific words to invite in the elements. In reclaiming, it's much, like I mentioned earlier, we're much more eclectic. So, and we start invoking the elements actually in the east, where we start casting in the north, then we start in the east to invoke the elements. And that could look like a song, it could look like a dance, it could look like a spoken word thing, it could be completely silent. You never know in reclaiming what an invocation might look like.
Right. Well, that's where we're going to differ a bit.
I love it.
Yeah, a little bit of change here. I do start in the east, and when we do that, we definitely use the wand, and I do. And I do the invoking pentagram, and I call the watchers of the towers of the east and the watchers of the towers of the south. And the, you know, so I call them in, and then at that point, we each element and direction are connected. So we connect the east with air, and we talk about what we're bringing into the circle for new insights, and we create the intent further by invoking that. And we may ask for a specific deity if we're doing something. So, you know, it would, you know, certain ones for each element in each direction. And then, of course, once we've done that and we go all the way around and come back to east, closing the circle, then we invoke the above and the below, which again is what would be the remainder of the container that were the ball, the sphere,
right?
The above and the below.
Interesting. Interesting. So, again, I'm going to refer to reclaiming.
Okay.
That's where most of my ritual is happening, but we invoke all the elements, right, east. Well, and this is tricky because in Australia, like I said, they do it, they do it counterclockwise, and the elements are not in the same directions as they are on the northern hemisphere. The southern hemisphere, they're kind of flipped.
Right.
And depending on who you ask, east and west may be flipped or they may not be. They may be the same way that we hold them in the northern hemisphere.
How interesting.
Yeah. It's, but they actually invoke without including the directions. So when they step in to invoke air, they don't necessarily say, welcome east, welcome air. They just invoke air. So I've kind of fallen into that practice recently. Anyway, so air, fire, water, earth, and spirit, which in reclaiming we hold as in the center. And then we invoke any, as I'm going to use air quotes here, honored guests, which may be the ancestors or a specific deity. For Samhain this year, we're invoking Hela, the Norse queen of the underworld, sort of. So then we do those sort of honored guests where they get their own invocation.
Their
own space.
Okay. Yeah. So we're kind of on the same wavelength.
And then you do the thing.
The thing.
The tofu of the ritual, the meat of the ritual, the working. What are we doing? Why are we here? What's going on? How do you do it?
Right. Now, also remember, at least for me, each one of the four directions has a candle, and as we enter, we engage with that element and that quarter, we also light the candle. So we have four quarter candles. And then we go to the center where obviously we start to do our work.
Which I will just say right now, I have, you know, I have a flair for the dramatic.
No, really?
Just a little.
Oh, okay.
And I love candles. And I have envisioned or planned or dreamt about so many gorgeous outdoor scenes where there's candles and or the beach and candles at the corners, and then it's windy.
Ah, yes.
And your candles won't stay lit, and the beautiful vision is not quite as dramatic.
Yes.
So I have a mixed feeling about candles.
Well, since we have that as a little asterisk here, we also have what is now LED candle lights. So we can use those.
True. You've just totally revolutionized my outdoor ritual thought process.
There you go. And they flicker, too, so you can get the feel without the trauma.
I'm writing this down.
Okay, see?
I mean, I use them indoors when we have public rituals in spaces because you can't have candles anywhere anymore.
Right,
but
no.
But why I never thought of that to go to the beach with, I don't know.
Well, that is one of the things of this marvelous dialogue that we're having.
Thanks, the goddess, for you, Elvira.
Oh, thank you very much, goddess. Thank you for letting me be here. And
okay.
All now.
The working. We do
the working.
Thing. So if it's Samhain, we do a thing to honor Samhain. If it's devotional, we do the thing to honor the god. If it's a rite of passage, we do the thing to honor that rite of passage. If it's the full moon, maybe we're doing a healing ritual or whatever. We do the
right.
thing.
Right.
We do the thing. And what I like, really, is to have a takeaway. You know, especially when you're going to a group ritual or a public ritual, it's nice to be able to take something home, a stone or a pebble or a matchstick that reminds you of that ritual so you can kind of tap back into the energy of it.
Right,
if
right.
You get lost. Yeah.
Which we can. I noticed that the thing that happens with me is that over the period of time of doing rituals, I have many little touchstones, and gosh, now I don't know what they are.
That is
so,
yeah.
You know, I love it, and I will always want to have it, but I have it's kind of a pile or a cauldron of all that stuff.
Yeah. So one of the things I like to do in a ritual for the tofu or meat is to burn all those old things that have just become dust collectors and I no longer hold the memory is lost.
Right.
Once I'm done with the working and once I'm done with that ritual, I'm going to forget why I had that little bundle or that matchstick or that golden bead or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can burn it or give it away or put it in some salt water and release it and you know, do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
That's very nice. I like that idea.
Yeah, burning.
Burning. Oh, well, you know how it is. Us fire folk here.
Yeah, see, we in the chat room, we have a suggestion to keep a journal to put in there, things like that. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So we're running short on time, so I'm realizing we should probably speed up the process.
Okay, so we've sped up the process. We finished the ritual, and
now we raise energy.
Great. Yeah. How do we raise energy?
We sing. We dance. We tone, we have sex.
We drum.
We do things to get that moving and build a little cone of power.
Mm-hmm.
And then we release that cone of power.
Right, to do whatever it is that we have intended for it to do.
Right.
Okay.
And then we say thank you.
That's it.
To all of the things and entities and gods and elements and all of the things that we've invited into the circle.
Exactly.
We say thank you and hail and farewell.
And then we take the circle down.
Right. We open our container.
Exactly. That's exactly. This is we are in agreement. In
good, this. Good. So at least we close our ritual.
We close our ritual, exactly. And reversing it is how I've been taught. So, you know, I'd go
right.
North, west, south, east,
yes.
And release above and below.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And there's been some rituals that I've attended or been involved with that have been so intense or emotional or what have you, that there's been a second grounding process after the ritual to really help people come back into their bodies
right.
or calm down or reconnect to the earth or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can really get into some intense stuff in the ritual space.
And that is where cakes and ale, if you haven't done it within the circle,
right.
which sometimes we do,
right.
we always make sure we eat afterwards with something to nice snashies because that's about grounding into our body again.
Yeah.
So it depends on what the ritual is. If we do cakes and ale, i.e., a liquid and then something to share as a physical piece of the goddess or the god, which, again, we can talk about that some other time being similar to Mass and the Eucharist. But as far as that's usually honoring, but always eating afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if that is just a bite of
mm-hmm.
something or a sip of something.
Mm-hmm.
And often one of the blessings that we offer is may you never hunger.
And may you never thirst.
Right. And what's very sweet, especially in public ritual, is to see, you know, 60 to 300 people coming together and passing a basket from one person to one person with nuts or fruits or breads or whatever in that basket and offering that blessing over
mm-hmm.
and over and hearing it spoken
mm-hmm.
60
mm-hmm.
to 300 times.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It is.
Yeah.
It is very empowering and very intense.
Yeah.
So we have gone through a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gotten to the latter part of the last few minutes, I think,
yeah.
of our show. So is there anything else we want to talk about before we prep people for the next show?
Someone in the chat just said they thought I was talking about 300 years old people. I've not yet met someone 300 years old, but I do hold out hope that vampires truly exist. So you never know. I'll keep you posted.
That's a possibility, but I don't think we'd be passing cakes and ale around, dear.
Right. A comment about some of the energy of the ritual being sent to the earth as a healing,
mm-hmm.
and that often happens, especially after you raise that cone of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's you know, like after having an orgasm, you're high a little bit, and you need to kind of put some of that back.
Right.
And you'll see, folks, you raise this energy and it builds and raises, and then everyone drops to put their hands on the ground.
Exactly.
Sending some of it right back to the mother.
Right back.
Yeah.
Because that's the way we also ground, and we give back to her, too.
Yeah.
It is a powerful in groups anywhere from 200 to 300 people.
Or more.
Yes,
I've been to, there's the spiral dance ritual that happens in San Francisco every year around Samhain.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest one I've attended had 2,000 people.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the largest ritual west of the Mississippi.
Oh, my goodness.
It takes place every October. It's quite intense to be, you know, because let's be real. Everyone who comes to a ritual that big in a city that big is not necessarily pagan or
true.
A witch. There, many people are curious and want to see what the heck's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're there, you're in it.
Yep.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
With spiral dance with 2,000 people.
Oh my gosh. That.
Absolutely. Next thing is homework. Home adventures, as my teacher Seed would always say,
mm-hmm.
the home adventure, which is to do a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tonight it's a full moon. It's fall equinox.
Forward to that, we will have much to say. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.